Hello and welcome to CICK News. CICK News is your local and regional news coverage provided by me, Pamela Hassan, and Dan Messick for Smithers Community Radio. This news program is funded by the Community Radio Fund of Canada and the Government of Canada, and our aim is to provide local coverage on stories that affect the lives of Northerners like you.
Good morning. It's great to be here on the traditional territories of the Lekwungen-speaking people, the Songhees and Esquimalt First Nations. I'm really excited today to use this opportunity really to announce the kickoff of the poverty reduction strategy here in British Columbia. You'll know that this is a strategy that the NDP, that we've been advocating for a number of years. It was a strong commitment in our platform that we would move forward with a poverty reduction strategy in British Columbia. And today, I'm really pleased to announce the appointment of the Minister's Advisory Forum on Poverty Reduction, which is a committee that will come together and will be working to provide advice to me as the minister over the coming months and moving forward on how we achieve our objectives around poverty reduction.
That was the voice of Nicholas Simons, the Minister of Social Development and Poverty Reduction, in 2017 as the BC government launched their program and strategy to reduce overall poverty by 25% and child poverty by 50%. In September of 2023, Food Banks Canada released their poverty report card, targeting and rating each province's strategies, tactics, policies, as well as feedback on its social services. BC received a D+ rating, which doesn't sound good, but was also the federal average across Canada's provinces and territories. In an effort to assist not-for-profit, charitable, and social enterprise organizations, the Ministry of Social Development and Poverty Reduction released $14 million province-wide for the Critical Food Infrastructure Fund, to which $5 million will be allocated to projects in northern BC. Applications for that funding can be accessed through the United Way and is open to organizations up to November 20th. The Public Health Association of BC, along with the Ministry of Social Development and Poverty Reduction, also just announced the Resilient North Fund, allocating another $5 million to food programs from Hot Meals, Community Fridges, New Freezers, or Feasts. But there's still much to be done, according to Minister Malcolmson, with the new and updated strategies being announced in the spring of 2024 by her office. I spoke with Minister Malcolmson about some of these strategies, as well as a look back since 2017 when this poverty reduction plan was announced and how far her government has come. Let's listen to that now.
I'm Sheila Malcolmson. I'm Minister for Social Development and Poverty Reduction for British Columbia. I'm elected in Nanaimo, and I'm joining you from the BC Legislature, the territory of the Lekwungen-speaking people.
Would you tell me about the Critical Food Infrastructure Fund?
Really such an encouraging program, and it was great for me being in the north just 10 days ago and getting a bit of a sense of how it's landing. You know, bottom line is we want people to have the support and the services that they need to be able to access healthy, nutritious food. And so this particular fund is $14 million so that community groups can build the kind of food security infrastructure that will help them redistribute free food at a time of really high costs. $5 million of that $15 million is specially designated for the North. And we are partnering with United Way. We're funding it, and they are the ones that are managing the distribution and the intake. Applications are open until November 20th. Mm-hmm. And anybody who's interested in finding out how this program works and whether they would be eligible for it, they can contact United Way directly and they can work through their website on that.
Do you have any examples of projects that this funding has been used for?
The kind of projects that people will be, you know, might, you know, want in their communities and that this can help them fund. Big picture is it's for year-round access to food and the availability of nutritious and culturally appropriate food. It could be warehouse storage to receive and process and store and redistribute food to community members. It could be equipment to preserve and process food for extended food life. Refrigerated vehicles and trucks to transport food. And then investment in growing more food locally. That can include hunting, fishing, harvesting, gardening, shelter for animals. It's pretty broad.
Yeah.
And we've got a couple of other pools of money that we've been pushing out the door, just really recognizing, you know, how hard global inflation has hit people. And, you know, notwithstanding a lot of new investments that we've put to put more money in people's pockets and build out affordable housing and raise social assistance rates and so many things we've been doing, the cost of food has really outstripped so much of that. So we've also funded money that we're working with Food Banks BC on that will directly help local food banks with just the cost of doing business. Also funded $15 million for a First Nations well-being fund that has projects included within it that relate to food security. We're working with First Nations Summit on that. And then we've also funded in a different project with United Way Food Hubs, which are kind of where community organizations that are cooperating together can get funding for that kind of infrastructure that links them together. And one of the terms of the funding is that we'll open one food hub in the north this year, and then one to two more in the next couple of years. So that work is ongoing in addition to this specific fund that you and I are talking about today.
Yeah, that's really exciting. A little teeny segue, I guess. Do you know where that food hub in the north is?
Those conversations are happening right now still. When I was in Prince George just a couple of weeks ago, this is very much a current topic. And so along, you know, together with United Way, we're focusing in on what community is the most ready and where we can start to generate results for people the fastest.
On the United Way granting application for the Critical Infrastructure Fund, it says that one of the aims of the program is to increase access to traditional and culturally preferable foods by supporting initiatives prioritizing Indigenous food sovereignty and regional self-determination. So can you tell me why is traditional and culturally preferable foods important to First Nations people?
You know, we've been talking to a lot of people over this last 9 months. We've been doing public engagement related to poverty reduction and food security across all of British Columbia. We've had more than 10,000 inputs altogether as we're writing our next poverty reduction strategy. But specifically with the engagement with First Nations, we really heard a lot about food security being critical to self-determination and exercising food sovereignty. We heard a lot about the importance of relationships within food systems too, land and water, their impact on access to culture and health, identity, well-being, healthy, thriving ecosystems. And then we also heard quite a bit about the need for improved and dignified access to nutritious and culturally safe food, especially for Indigenous people. So that feedback that we heard directly from Indigenous people has been, you know, turned into, well, funding that First Nations Well-Being Fund that I mentioned. An example of a kind of scale of project through that fund, we gave $35,000 to the Chisalata Carrier Nation. And they're using that to promote local food security, build a community fish camp and a smokehouse, and teaching traditional food canning methods. So people that, you know, if anybody's listening that thinks that that fits them on the Indigenous food sovereignty side, then they could get in touch with First Nations Summit. We've given the money to them and then they're administering it on our behalf so that it can get, you know, most directly to the people on the ground.
I've spoken with representatives in Smithers and Prince Rupert who work at Salvation Army kitchens. And one major concern in both locations is the uptick in users of the Salvation Army's soup kitchens and emergency hamper programs and the decrease in donations. So how is this fund going to help these small northern community organizations that are suffering that imbalance of people to help donations and money coming in versus how many people need to use their services?
Mm-hmm. So if those organizations wanted to invest in, say, refrigerator trucks so that when there's a grocery store or a trucking company that has a big load of food, you know, it could be like, I don't know, like sometimes it's like rack of lamb and cheese and sometimes like really fantastic fresh stuff, then that this Critical Food Infrastructure Fund would be for that kind of infrastructure. So they could apply for that. If what they are feeling is simply that they are just getting hit by the cost of operations, then in that case, they would want to turn to another fund that is active this year. We funded $15 million to Food Banks BC, and $5 million of that is designated against specifically for the North. So that's just like, you know, local food access projects developed by organizations in the North, setting up just, you know, simply getting support just for the cost of operations, food security networks. And then there's also some of that funding that is designated for wildfire and kind of emergency related response. So that's, again, another fund. And if anybody is, you know, feeling like, which of these do I turn to? It always just, I mean, Food Banks BC and United Way are coordinating really well. We don't want people to have to fill out multiple applications. It's really just about letting people know that support is there. And then my Office of Social Development and Poverty Reduction, we can always help folks navigating that system as well.
In 2018, the provincial government introduced a number of long-term strategies to tackle the needs of British Columbians, including its poverty strategy, Together BC, an affordable housing plan, wage increases, and an expert panel on basic income. What strategies are most vital to your office for battling poverty now, 5 years later?
So since the NDP took government in 2017, this has been a priority. At that time, British Columbia was the last place in the country to have a poverty reduction strategy. We brought that in, and then we're renewing it right now. We'll have a new strategy that we bring into the legislature this spring. So we've been hearing a lot from people just kind of currently about what worked for them and then what we need to do more of. We did have a goal in that first poverty reduction strategy of reducing poverty in BC by 25% across the board, and then child poverty by 50%. And we did that. We exceeded those targets actually by, you know, a mix, you know, a real diversity of approaches. We increased assistance rates 5 times, including increasing the shelter rate payments for the first time in 16 years. Wow. We increased the minimum wage 5 times so that BC's is now the highest of any province. Brought in the BC family benefit, which used to be called, when we first announced it, it was the Child Opportunity Benefit. Now it's the family benefit. And then just historic investments in childcare and affordable housing, all things that, you know, take the edge off the cost of living. But global inflation has just been such a hit that we know that there's a lot of people that are struggling. And so we're continuing to invest in people and continuing to look at how we can expand more programs like this in order to drive poverty rates down further again.
Yeah. Minister Malcolmson, what are the underlying reasons of the unaffordability crisis? And I'm speaking, you know, referring to the 2023 BC budget released.
Yeah. You know, the budget this spring, you know, continued our pattern of investing more in people and building up social infrastructure, building back that social safety net. But, you know, just everything that informed that budget, and then it's even truer now, is just the terrible impact of global inflation. You know, even though we've put a lot more money in people's pockets and we've built a lot more affordable housing, there are, you know, 250,000 more people living here than there were 2 years ago. Rising housing costs, rising food costs, you know, it's stretching household budgets. Mm-hmm. And just, you know, that, you know, inflationary impact just continues to have such a hit. So we're continuing to work to ease that pressure by putting more money in people's pockets, lowering the cost of childcare, lowering the cost of car insurance, you know, and continuing to do everything we can within provincial powers, given that we can't change global inflation, but we can, you know, build that path out of poverty by continuing to invest in social programs. Yeah. And continuing to invest in the employment programs as well that can help people that have been alienated from work get back into the job market. And if they're on social assistance, supplement that by starting to get back into the work field. So we're really trying to hit this from multiple fronts and really recognizing that we need to have a diversity of approaches. That's the system that we're building.
Yeah. So Food Banks BC and the Public Health Association of BC will support local food access projects developed by organizations from Northern BC. And in that, I'm referring to the Resilient North Research Project. Can you tell me about that?
It was just so great. I was there in Prince George with Food Banks BC and PHABC. I got introduced to the Resilient North Research Project. It was really powerful to see people in the room in Prince George, you know, who have been really working together in a really strong way, just working shoulder to shoulder to support vulnerable people and just to do all the therapeutic impacts of food delivery, you know, how people will be less isolated, more connected, more healthy, but also just getting to know their neighbors better whether they're making food for others or whether they're sitting down for community meals. It was really encouraging to hear that. So this project is funded through that $5 million that was designated for the North. We did kind of a seed money project into this research project, which was helping this Resilient North project, helping to identify local solutions that are appropriate and sustainable and scalable. And some of the outcomes of that research is what informed the designated $5 million for North-specific projects under our Food Banks BC funding. So that, you know, kind of that next phase will be funding for the North local food access projects developed by organizations from Northern BC that understand the unique challenges that are faced by the rural, remote First Nations communities, the climate, the extra transportation challenges, all those things really mean, you know, what works in Surrey is just not going to work in PG. And so that's, you know, just really important for our government. We're also going to be setting up 3 regional food security networks of not-for-profits, businesses, all levels of governments, the agricultural sector, really collaborating to expand access to food. And then finally, expanding the research that Resilient North Research Project started to capture what are the unique needs of diverse groups, the seniors, immigrants, refugees, people of color, ensuring that their voices and stories of accessing food programs are heard and are reflected in that food security system that we're working to build. Yeah. So really encouraging work and really, you know, raise my hands to the community members that, you know, took the time to show me what it is that they've built so far and what their optimism is about how they can build on that. And with our investment, really have that ability to connect more people with the affordable or free nutritious food and build community at the same time.
Yeah, that's so important too when you think about, you know, eating and is sharing too and making those connections while, you know, sharing or preparing food. It's so much more important than just feeding people.
Yeah, so much. You know, I get to meet volunteer, you know, people that have maybe retired, say a retired chef comes back, works in this community food project. More volunteers come because they hear, you know, he's really super charismatic and really knows how to put together, you know, who knows what's going to be donated by the grocery store. It's like, oh, tonight it's stuffed peppers. You know, that's pretty, you know, this like people really, really strengthening their community by working together for a really strong imperative and combating waste at the same time. You know, it's there's some really great projects that bring together that environmental and social justice piece in a way that leaves people, you know, better off in the end at every way. So really, I'm really glad to be learning about these projects on the ground and really looking forward to getting back to visit next summer and see what the communities have been able to build with our support.
What are your thoughts on the poverty report cards that was just released by Food Banks Canada?
But, you know, we, you know, recognize that there are places where the Food Banks BC poverty report card, you know, says, yeah, BC is a leader, like investing in public housing, for example, a leader across the country. We're also the highest cost jurisdiction to live in. And so even though we've increased social assistance rates 5 times since we formed government, it still isn't enough in people's pockets to deal with the impacts of global inflation. So, you know, the findings of that report certainly consistent with what we're hearing on the ground. And that's why we are doing that work to review our poverty reduction strategy. I'm really grateful to the, you know, 10,000 people that gave us input on that. It'll affect what we table in the legislature this coming spring.
Thanks so much. And thank you so much for your time. I really appreciate it.
All right. Thanks for the conversation. Bye now. Okay.
And the Smithers Community Services Association is celebrating 50 years in the community with an open house today at 3815 Railway Ave, today from 11:30 until 3:30 p.m. The public is welcome to come and enjoy coffee, tea, snacks, as well as wagon rides as a way to celebrate the community services' impact in the community in these past 50 years. The Smithers Community Services Association is also launching a year-long program called the WE Project. I spoke with four staff members of the Smithers Community Services Association about the WE Project and what the public can expect with engagement in the year to come. Let's listen to that now.
Hi, my name is Laurel Lindstrom. I am part of the Homelessness Prevention Program Coordinator.
Hi, my name is Erin O'Coffey, and I'm a support worker at Goodacre Place.
Hello, my name is Tammy Crofts, and I'm a support worker at Goodacre Place.
So we're here to talk about WE, the WE Project. So would you like to start telling me about the WE Project?
The WE Project. This is a way for us to celebrate our community, our friends, our neighbors, our fellow co-workers, our other service providers, to be all inclusive, to accept everybody as they are and where they're at.
Yes, we're excited to invite everybody in and have a chance to write the narrative on how we're inclusive in our community of all cultures, of ethnic diversities, and where we come from.
What are some of the activities or projects or events that are going to be part of this?
So we're going to be doing events year round to celebrate our 50th. Mm-hmm. So there'll be lots of fun things up and coming. And our first one being the open house today. So we're going to have an open house scavenger hunt that people can do when they come in. We have a photo board. We're going to have wagon rides and prizes, door prizes, lots of door prizes, and get to meet everybody and see what programs we have and just really learn who we are and what we do.
Mm-hmm. We want to be seen in the community and for the community to know what we have to offer. So they'll have an opportunity to take a tour through the historic train station and see all the different programs and a chance to engage and ask questions, and maybe there'll be a fit for them.
What kind of impact do you think the Community Services Association has had in this 50 years in this community?
I think we've had a huge impact, especially for families that are struggling or those that are looking for housing, those that are coming in from new countries and need to learn the language. We help with all of that, as well as job hunting and... It's a huge impact. We have a lot of social services type activities that happen here.
Yeah. Let's say someone is new to the community and they are looking for some assistance. What's the best way to connect with the Community Services Association?
You can call us at any time, mm-hmm, and inquire, or you can just drop in at the old railway station, okay, and come in and talk to us. More than happy to help.
Excellent. And I guess logistics, when is the open house starting today and what time is it going to?
It starts at 11:30 a.m. and will go till 3:30 p.m. Okay. There's going to be like hot chocolate, coffee, tea, cookies, anniversary cake. So yeah, just grab some goodies.
Horse-drawn wagon rides.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Great prizes.
Yeah, excellent.
11:30 to 3:30.
Is there anything else that I'm not asking that is important for people to know, do you think?
Just thinking, you know, 50 years, it started with a small group of people before we moved into the train station and started work on the train station. And that core group of people started with some, even when it came down to the Christmas hampers and food programs. And we've had many programs come and go as times change, and we continue to look for the need and encourage feedback at all times to see if we can address the needs that we might be missing.
Mm-hmm. I've been speaking to people that work at food programs, both at schools in Houston, Salvation Army in Prince Rupert and as well here in Smithers. And some of the feedback that I've been getting from the people that work there is that there's been just this really big increase in people wanting to use the soup kitchens and also any of the food hamper programs, and that they just feel like there's a drop in donations this year, or staff or volunteers. Does the Community Services Association, do you try to tackle those, or are you feeling the same sort of struggle?
Well, I think it's been hard times for a lot of people with the rising costs of food. People are being much more conscious. So we do understand that life has been very taxing for everybody and there'll be ebbs and flows. But we encourage anybody with any spare time that they would like to come and donate time, or remember that there is a place that people can offer or donate food or donate to the Christmas hamper. We'll be using this opportunity during our 50th to collect at that time if anybody has any extra.
So who are some of the groups that you, because you're kind of the hub, right? Like you're sort of a hub that connects people to the services that they need. Who are some of the partners in town that you work with?
We work with the Friendship Center. We work with Thomas Robinson Consulting. They have some special needs clients, some that fall under the preview where they need help from us as well with housing. Mm-hmm. We work with NSDP, Passage House, Houston Community Services we work with, and the Ministry of Family Services and Development.
And we work with outreach. And so if there's a need, we'll try and find the resource appropriate for them.
Was there anything else that I didn't ask that you think is important to know? If you would start by introducing yourself.
Yeah, my name is Myung Lee. I'm the new executive director. So I have been in this position for 5 months.
Ooh, very
I'm
new
to the town, and I came from Surrey. So lots of things that I'm learning. Mm-hmm. And I'm so excited with our 50th project and open house. So we project is the, when you say we, means that all of us. So especially with SSSA, we are not alone. Because of the we can be here, mm-hmm, with the 50th anniversary. So we identify that this is part of a community's role, job. And then with the 50th, what we want to try to achieve is that we want to provide a space or a place of gathering and engaging, sharing, and healing whatever we are facing here. Mm-hmm. So I think this will, diversity is a big piece, and DEI and accessibility, reconciliation is the area that we still learn, yeah, to learn. So I think over the course of for the 1 year, what we're gonna try to do, we're gonna provide that space and opportunity. So for example, you know, for the newcomers, we're gonna start launching the new website, mm-hmm, that has newcomer guidebook, mm-hmm, so that people can get the idea. And then we're gonna also have community sort of gathering for the celebration of Canadian Multiculturalism Day, which is usually June 27. So next year we're gonna do something with the community. And then we're gonna also have an open call for the mural project. So we're going to have a really big mural here, but we're going to ask all the community to get involved.
Okay.
Something like that. So, I mean, this is all like a 50th anniversary project, is provide some space that they're going to talk about challenges and get the solution together. So this is an ongoing project, isn't it? But I mean, we don't want to have this one-time events and then done. Mm-hmm. No, we want to have that opportunity. And then also I came from the other side, and then I'm going to challenge the community as well, as a person who has a different perspective, and everyone has a different perspective. Mm-hmm. So we're going to make all some progress with all the differences. But in the end of the day, we want to have a unity. That's what we are looking for.
You've been listening to CICK News. If you have any hot tips or news stories you think we should cover, contact us at cicknews@smithersradio.com or follow us on Facebook at CICK News. CSCK News is made possible by the Government of Canada and the Community Radio Fund of Canada, the only organization mandated to financially supporting campus and community radio stations across Canada. You can also catch our fresh shows each week at theskeena.com or subscribe to our podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you find your podcasts. Thanks to our producer Pam Hassan and all of our roving reporters, I'm Dan Messick. Thanks for listening.